perceive the age of Kali is expressed in verse 4 of this chapter. Once when Maharaj Parikshit went on his way to conquer the world, he saw the master of Kali Yuga, who was lower than a Shudra, disguised as a king and herding the legs of a cow and bull. The king at once caught hold of him to deal sufficient punishment. Adhyaya Prakash. Suta Goswami explains that once, as Maharaj Parikshit was reigning under the guidance of the Brahmanas, he punished the master of Kali Yuga, who caused pain to a cow and a bull. Shaunaka Rishi inquires about the punishment of Kali and explains the glories of hearing about topics related to Krishna. Suta relates that after Maharaj Parikshit receives the influence of the age of Kali within his kingdom, he initiates a tour to defeat Kali. While touring, Maharaj Parikshit hears the glories of his great relatives, the Pandavas. Dharma, who is wandering in the form of a bull, questions the earth in the form of a cow about the cause of the earth's current miserable condition. The earth replies that her misery is caused by her separation from Krishna's presence and by an increase of Kali's influence due to Krishna's absence. Maharaj Parikshit then arrives. Shloka Anusharanam. After the Pandavas retired from this material life, Maharaj Parikshit assumed the royal position of emperor of the world under the instruction of the Brahmanas. The young emperor took Iravati, the daughter of King Uttara, who was the son of Virat, as his wife. Oh, okay, so by this time Uttara, King Uttara, means the brother that Arjuna took out, as his wife. Wow. Nimesha. Second purport notes that although Iravati was Parikshit's cousin's sister, the marriage was allowed because she was not of the same Gotra. Like that. I think it can be done on the mother's side. You can't do it on the father's side because it's the same Gotra. In other words, the paternal cousins can't be married, but the maternal can. That's only if we find in South Indian tradition that they do that. But, you know, it's a popular, it seems to be here that they're, because especially like Dwarka and those places, that's South India actually. So then somehow or another it must have been practiced at that time. Is in South, the Brahmins and all that, they also follow that. But in North, then they avoid. But in South, you know, I guess because they, maybe in North they can't tell the difference between paternal and maternal cousins. So, but in South they have enough intelligence they can. Iravati gave birth to four sons headed by Janamejaya, Nimesha. An account of Janamejaya's life is given in second purport. There his brothers are identified as Shrutasena, Ugrasena, and Bhimasena, two. Under the direction of his spiritual master, Kripacharya, Maharaj Parikshit performed three horse sacrifices on the banks of the Ganga, and at that time, even the common people were able to see the demigods that attended. Just one thing that comes to note here is twice it's been mentioned how the Brahmins are leading under the guidance of the Brahmins. It's been mentioned twice in these three verses. So, that's very essential for the kings, because the king is managing, but in managing, because the king wants to do things that are right. He wants to do it according to scripture. That makes him different than, let's say, a Vaishya who's managing, because he has to do it according to scripture. But because he's a Kshatriya, it has to be practical. It has to work. So sometimes, though their desire is to follow the scripture, in the performance of their duties to make it practical, sometimes they may overlook something of the scriptures, something that's in a long-term effect. It's practical right now, but there may be a bigger picture that they're not taking into consideration. That, yes, you know, this is true, but, you know, according to the histories, then, you know, your great-great-grandfather, you know, he did this, and this happened, so therefore one should... All these things of the scripture says this or that, or so many things. So that's why it must be under the guidance of the Brahmins, because the Brahmins, who know the science of management, those kind of Brahmins, they give advice. Otherwise, then the difficulty is in being practical, they may miss something important like that, because they're dealing with much longer term. In the business community, then basically you're looking at much quicker turnover. So things can be done on a smaller scale, on a shorter time, because even the initial investment, you're immediately getting money back. Same time if you're
you have that capacity, you'll think in a bigger plan, you know, for when, you know, in the future. But the kings, because it's a kingdom and citizens, it has to work now, but it also has to be valuable in the future, because the kingdom has to run. Does that make sense? Like that.
While Parikshit Maharaj ruled from his capital, Hastinapur, the symptoms Kali Yuga began infiltrating his kingdom. When he came to know that some of his subjects were taking up meat eating, illicit sex, gambling, and intoxication, which are the root causes of all kinds of quarrel, the news was most unpalatable. As a Kshatriya, Parikshit felt enlivened at the prospect of taking these miscreants to task for polluting his kingdom, which included the entire planet. Okay. He mounted his chariot marked with the flag of a lion and drawn by black horses. Leaving Hastinapur surrounded by his army, Maharaj Parikshit boldly set out to conquer any and all regions of the world that defied Vedic Dharma. Of course, his grandfather, Maharaj Yudhishthir, had already formally declared Maharaj Parikshit the emperor of the world. It was still necessary for him to practically establish his supremacy in exact taxes. So even though it's, in this case it's hereditary, still the Kshatriya himself should be able to do it himself. It's not that his grandfather established the kingdom and only his grandfather maintained it and he's living off of that. No, the Kshatriya has to be. He could also do it, but since he's already the emperor, it's much easier than before Yudhishthir. They had to go out and establish themselves as the emperor. So this, that makes it easier. You know, it's just like the, probably gives the example, the son of a high court judge, by being born, is not a high court judge, but because he's born in that family, is always in that environment, always hearing those discussions and the mentality, it's very easy for him to go to the school, pass the exams, and himself become a judge. Like that. But he still has to do the work. So because of that, then Parikshit is actually, he's not happy that something's going wrong, but he's happy he can perform the duty of going out as a Kshatriya and establishing this position, because then the people will respect it more. Because they know, like the citizens knew, Arjuna, he could go out and defeat anybody, and that's why they're sitting on the throne. So the citizens feel very proud, very protected. So then in this way he can also prove to his citizens that he is also a worthy king and get that trust and all that. Therefore they'll be even more peaceful and everything will go. If you're secure, you don't bother breaking rules. If you're secure, you don't tend towards sense gratification. You're secure, you're satisfied. So the king going out and establishing his authority is actually makes for the peaceful running of the kingdom.
Right. Prabhupada said, in the jungle, the lion is known as the king of beasts, but that doesn't mean he just lays on his side and the animals walk into his mouth.
Yes. That's very good. Very good. See? Is that clear? In other words, your duties are there, everything's there, but you still have to do it. You know? It's just the way the mind works, right? The husband's already, he's already told the wife how much he appreciates, and he's already, by his work, has appreciated it, but every day he has to do it again. Right? Then it's appreciated. So the same way as the kingdom. Every day, it needs to be obvious that their king is a king. Does that make sense? So that's leadership.
Maharaj Parikshit subjugated all the kings within the 9 Varshas of Jambudweep. Wow. Including Bhadrashva, Ketumala, Bharata, Uttarakuru, Kimpurusha, and so on. Wherever he traveled, Maharaj Parikshit was welcomed with speeches that were full of the glories of his illustrious forefathers and Lord Krishna. He would amply reward the reciters. Indeed, by hearing of how Lord Krishna had obliged his grandfathers by becoming their chariot driver, messenger, friend, spiritual master, and servant, considering himself to be younger in years, Maharaj Parikshit became overwhelmed with feeling of devotion to the lotus feet of the Lord. Interesting to note that in all these islands, Ketamala, Bharata, Uttarakuru, Kimpurusha, and so on, Bharata is what we know. What we can see and walk around on, and that's Bharatkanda. It means these other ones are outside of that. Because Jambudweep, the whole Tala, that has 7 Here he said nine varshas, so there must be some other breakdowns within. Does that make some sense? So he's the king when he says he's emperor of the earth. He means the whole thing, not just what we know of here. Because we're thinking, okay, it's here and up to here. No, it's the whole thing. So he was able to go to these Kim Purusha, where the Kim Purusha, Kim means what, and Purusha means, you know, person. So Kim Purusha is, what kind of person is this? It's like you have a human body with a horse head, stuff like that. You see someone like that, you go, what is that? So Kim Purusha is Sanskrit for, what's that? So that's the Kim Purushas. And Uttara Kuru, Arjuna could go up to the border of it, but couldn't go inside. But here, Parikshit is somehow or another able to go there. Uttara Kuru is up north. It's all the way north. It's like humans can't go there. It'd be like, we would think it's the North Pole. Yeah. But it's beyond there. So there's stuff beyond there. So they live up there. Like that. Okay. And then the other point is naturally is that he, by hearing about the Lord, he was appreciating. He would remunerate even reciters. Reciters are just suttas, they're considered shudras much of the time. And he would reward them very nicely because they're reminding him of the Lord and all that, and that would make him think of the Lord. So he would himself be absorbed, and he would reciprocate with those who created that environment. Meanwhile, Dharma, the personality of religion, was wandering about in the form of a bull. He came upon Bhumi, the goddess of the earth, who was in the form of a cow. Noticing her eyes were filled with tears and her body lustrous faded, so that she appeared to be like a mother that had lost her child, Dharma inquired, "O good lady, what is the cause of your grief? Are you suffering from some disease? Are you thinking of some relative who is away in a distant place? Are you lamenting for me because I have lost three of my legs? Are you in anxiety because henceforth, forward, the meat-eaters will exploit you? Are you aggrieved that the demigods no longer receive sacrificial offerings and thus other dependent living beings are suffering from drought and famine? Are you feeling compassionate for the poor women and children that have been left forlorn by unscrupulous men? Or are you unhappy to see how the goddess of learning is being mishandled by so-called Brahmins who are addicted to all kinds of sinful habits? Are you sorry to see how the genuine Brahmins are forced to take shelter of kings that no longer have respect for Brahminical culture?" This was 5,000 years ago. Yes. So these are all causes that are connected with the earth and her duties, because the citizens of the earth are her children. So all these things will cause suffering to her children. Right? It means she herself personally is thinking of somebody, you know, or having some personal difficulty or that, or her, those who live on the planet either aren't following religious principles, therefore things are going bad, or the kings are exploiting, or like this, the cows are being exploited, Brahmins aren't being taken care of, because when the cows and Brahmins and the women and children, then everything works. When they're all, so we can see is here, she's worried about these things, because otherwise then things don't go prosperous for, you know, her family. So we see here is also the thing of the Parikshit Maharaj was very much working under and had respect for Brahminical culture, but here, if that's removed, then the kings have to go, I mean, the Brahmins have to go before the kings and, you know, behave and they're obliged to act in ways that aren't very dignified to just somehow or another be able to perform their duties like that. Because they'd rather, it's like, better is to... If the best thing is a Brahmin never begs from a king. It's considered last option. Beg from other people, avoid begging from kings, because the king takes on 1/6 of the karma of the kingdom. That's if he's a good king, if he's protecting. If he's a bad king, doesn't protect, he takes tax, doesn't protect, he gets 100% of all the people's sins. Like that. So you want to avoid taking their money, you know. Their money is worse than taking from, slaughterhouses, oil factories, prostitution, circles,
means it's like the combination of all that. So, therefore, taking money from the king's already bad. And that's, we're talking about respectful, nice kings. Right? Because even Parikshit Maharaj is taking on a sixth. And by giving in charity and all that to the Brahmins, that's how he gets rid of his karma. You understand? That's why before they would give tens of thousands of cows in charity, because they got to get rid of serious karma. Because they're taking on one-sixth of the kingdom's karma. Does that make sense? And we're talking nice kings you don't avoid. Now, let alone bad kings that you not only have to get karma, but they're disrespectful. They consider they're superior because the Brahmins have to come. The Brahmins are worshipped by... The Brahmins worship God and that. But for their maintenance, they come to me. So therefore, I'm bigger than God. I think the Gita mentions that as the demoniac mentality. So, such things. So then after that, if they can't handle that, then they start taking up themselves kshatriya duties, vaishya duties to maintain themselves. Or, you know, just go beg from anybody. You know, like that. Quote, such administrative heads are now under the influence of Kali. Consequently, the state affairs are all in disorder. You are unhappy because of this, or because the general populace no longer follows the regulative principles that govern eating, sleeping, and mating. Thus they perform these acts unrestrictedly. Dear Mother Earth, the Supreme Lord Krishna incarnated just to relieve your burden. Now, being bereft of his presence, are you remembering his transcendental pastimes and thus feeling the pangs of separation? I think that the powerful influence of time must have forcibly taken away all of your good fortune, and for this reason, you are now lamenting. If we notice that there is a very great similarity here by the questions that Dharma puts to Bhumi and Yudhishthir put to Arjuna, because technically they're the same person. You know what I'm saying? He starts off with you, your health, if something happened, or then it gets into the duties, then it keeps going back and more big kshatriya duties, and finally says, or is it because Krishna's gone? It's the exact same pattern. You know? So it's like, you know the answer, but you don't want to say it. You know, because it's too painful. Speaking in the form of a cow, the earth deity replied, O Dharma, you were also maintained by your four legs by the mercy of Lord Krishna, the reservoir of all good qualities, so that happiness spread throughout the universe. Among those good qualities are truthfulness, cleanliness, intolerance of others' unhappiness, the power to control anger, self-satisfaction, straightforwardness, steadiness of mind, control of the sense organs, responsibility, equality, tolerance, equanimity, faithfulness, knowledge, absence of sense enjoyment, leadership, chivalry, influence, the power to make everything possible, the discharge of proper duty, complete independence, dexterity, fullness of all beauty, serenity, kind-heartedness, ingenuity, gentility, magnanimity, determination, perfection in all knowledge, proper execution. Possession of all objects of enjoyment, joyfulness, immovability, fidelity, fame, worship, pridelessness, being as the personality of Godhead. And 40, eternity, and many other transcendental attributes. They are eternally present and ever never be separated from him. Lord Krishna has now concluded his performance of transcendental pastimes upon the earth, and in his absence, the age of Kali has spread its influence everywhere. It is because of this that I am very aggrieved. So he points out it's the last one, because the Lord is here, these are the qualities that he has. So by his association, then everybody develops these qualities. And as we can see, it's a very nice list of qualities. So these qualities come by associating with the Lord, his devotees, and practicing the culture of Krishna consciousness. Or in this case, the social culture of Varnashram. Does that make sense? So it makes all these come. They're all part of human life. Right? So when the Lord is not present, then these qualities go,
and people turn to sinful life. They don't stay with proper. That makes sense. So I think these qualities themselves, then there's 64. Here is mentioned 40. And in Nectar Devotion, then 64 are mentioned. There's unlimited, but these are like prominent that we can relate to. Right? Just like sounds are unlimited, you know, in music. There's sounds, the dogs can hear things, bugs can hear things, we can't hear. But for humans, then there are 22 sounds that you can actually distinguish for the trained ear. 22, right? And 12 main that everybody can hear. But 22 are there. But there's unlimited. So Krishna has unlimited qualities, but this 64 is kind of like we can relate to it and accommodate it. More than that just gets more than we can handle. Right. Nimesha. In 26 to 30 purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, the third quality, intolerance of another's unhappiness, can be subdivided into protection of the surrendered souls and two well-wishers for the devotees. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord states that he wants every soul to surrender unto him only, and he assures everyone that if one does so, he will give protection from the reactions of all sins. Unsurrendered souls are not devotees of the Lord, and thus there is no particular protection for everyone in general. For the devotees, he has all good wishes, and for those who are actually engaged in loving transcendental service of the Lord, he gives particular attention. He gives direction to such pure devotees to help them discharge their responsibilities on the path back to Godhead. By equality, 10, the Lord is equally kind to everyone, as the sun is equal in distributing its rays over everyone. Yet that there are many who are unable to take advantage of the sun's rays. Similarly, the Lord says that surrendering unto him is the guarantee for all protection from him. But unfortunate persons are unable to accept this proposition, and therefore they suffer from all material miseries. Even though the Lord is equally well-wishing to everyone, the unfortunate living being, due to bad association only, is unable to accept his instructions in toto. And for this, the Lord is never to be blamed. He is called a well-wisher for the devotees only. He appears to be partial to his devotees, but factually the matter rests on the living being to accept or reject equal treatment by the Lord. 14, as the equality, the equal treatment is, it's there for everyone, but you have to take advantage of it. So it's the same thing. This idea is, we have this idea everything's just going to come to us, but it's not a reality. You know, even Krishna, everything comes to him means it's already there in him. So as Atmarama, it's already there, but he expands it to interact with it. So even if he wants something to happen, there must be an endeavor. Right? For him, simply his desire is enough. But still, he makes the endeavor to, you know, get on his chariot and go somewhere and go walk somewhere and talk to somebody or make arrangements. He still does it for the lila. Right? So still it must be there, because sometimes it may be thought that whatever is there from the Lord is to just drop into my lap without me doing anything. But the point is that if the king, you know, has to prove himself, or the lion has to prove himself, then that means then we also have to prove ourselves. Our idea is that we just sit back, do nothing, and everyone just comes and serves us. But even God doesn't find that to be interesting, right? So our idea of who God is, you know, is not a real idea. God wouldn't want to be who we think God is. Does that make sense? You know, always this idea we think of the utopian, you know, doing nothing, sitting around and just enjoying life. But God doesn't think like that. To him, that's not interesting, and he's God, so he works. Krishna says, if I didn't perform my duties, no one else would. Because they say, God doesn't do why I should do. So he does. And he likes doing that, because in doing that, he interacts with his devotees. So, like that. So it's interesting. So sometimes our utopia, God wouldn't find interesting at all. Like that. I think, what is it? You told that one time in the Twilight Zone? There was one interesting, there's these
interesting group of personages back in the 60s who had very unique headspace, and they used to make programs about thought-provoking things. So one of their programs, there was this guy, he was a common thief, and he was had stolen something. He was running away from the police. Police were telling him to stop, and he jumped, went down a dead-end alley and jumped over the wall, you know. And I think a shot rang out, and he fell down the wall on the other side, and then he kind of like, you know, kind of like was surprised he was alive, you know, because he thought he was shot, but he was happy, you know. And then as he dusts himself off and all this, you know, a few extremely voluptuous, very available ladies came and, you know, are you okay and this and that, and took him and said, you know, do you need anything? And yeah, he needed this, and then they arranged it for him, and then, you know, it was like that. And he, they kept this, anything he wanted, they started arranging. And he started getting more and more, you know, how you say, enthusiastic about these things. And because he was a low-class guy, naturally whatever he does is not, you know, would not be in line with the principles. So then he goes and he's gambling, and whatever he says, he wins, and everything goes perfect like this. So in the beginning, he's in ecstasy. You know, everything's just the way he wanted it, and doesn't have to work for anything, just what happens, and like this, and these ladies arrange everything, and so he does nothing. And then after about 2 weeks, he's starting to get bored, because it'll always go the way he wants. There is no option. There's nothing. So then he turns to the lady who picked, you know, first came to him and picked him up and that and took him and was arranging everything for him. She says, you know, I didn't think, because, you know, he understood by this time that he had been shot and he had died. And so he had thought, this was here. And so then he thought, you know, I didn't think, you know, heaven would be so boring like this. You know, you get everything you want, it just happens, and then there's nothing there, nothing to look forward to. And then the girl with a wry smile looked at him and said, who said this was heaven? You didn't tell me that one? No. Maybe with someone else like that. But yeah, you understand, so our idea of what would be heaven, God would think would be hell. So if you actually got it, you would figure it out yourself. It means, you know, it's like, it means you have somebody like Gautama Buddha, right? There wasn't anything he didn't have. There wasn't any uncomfortableness he ever experienced in his whole life. But as soon as he saw, that was it. He could give up everything. Because he had everything, what's the use? Because if the mind's not peaceful, the soul's not satisfied, the intellect isn't inspired, then all facilities are useless. Does that make some sense?
It's interesting to compare on this theme. There are some different examples of how the Lord is rescues his devotee or takes care of his devotee along this theme of, you know, the Lord is there, but we have to do something to take shelter of him. So in South India, Sri Sampradaya, they have two sects, Tingalai and Vadagalai. So there's two points of view, and these are commonly known as the cat example and the monkey example. And it's interesting to examine them and then to see the Gaudiya Vaishnava example, which is different from those two. So the cat example is assuming, because these are Sri Vaishnava Brahmins, so even though they're Vaishnavas, hereditary Brahmins have this unfortunate tendency to just assume by their birth and by their training and deity worship, their puja, that they already, you know, they have their relationship with the Lord. The Lord is, you know, taking special favor towards them.
So in the cat example, then the devotee, Sri Vaishnava Brahman devotee, he's like a kitten. And the Lord is like the mother cat who just takes him by the scruff of the neck wherever she wants him to go. And this way, she's protecting the kitten. So this is one conception of how the Lord delivers his devotees. You're just there, you know. You just, relationship is there. You are the child of, you know, of the Lord. And the Lord will come and take care of you. You just have to be there. Then there's the monkey example, where you see the mother monkey scampering through the trees and the baby is hanging on. The baby is, also there's intimate relationship assumed in the very beginning. But in this case, the baby has to hang on, just, you know, because mother's going here and there. She's not holding the baby to herself. The baby is holding herself to the monkey, mother monkey. But in the Gaudiya Vaishnava example, it's the man in the well, which is, we're down here, fallen into the material world. The Lord is up there. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to give this humorous analogy. The Lord, by his instructions in Bhagavad Gita, these instructions are for everyone. Holy name is there for everyone. The process of devotional service is there equally for everyone. So it's like this, that the Lord is at the top and he's thrown a rope down for us. But then in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's humorous telling of this tale, the person at the bottom of the well says, "Yes, that's very nice that this rope is here, but how can I hang on to it? How can I, you know, can you please help me hang on to the rope? Can you please help me, you know, lift myself like this, one hand over the other?" So that the person at the top can't do. That much you have to do for yourself. The Lord is giving you the facility, but you have to take advantage. And then simultaneously, as you're taking advantage, then the intimate relationship is being developed, because you're coming closer and closer and closer. And then when you get close enough, then the Lord's going to reach down here and pull you out, you see. And then the intimacy will be established, as based on how well you follow the initial samadarshana, equal help he's giving to everyone. It starts off sama, he's equal to everyone, offering everyone the chance. So there's not this, see, that in South India, their conception of bhakti really doesn't go beyond dasya. So they if they can do puja, if they can do the formal deity worship in the Vaikuntha mood, Their concern is more actually with liberation. That's why these examples, either, you know, the Lord's going to take me, save me by grabbing me by the scruff of the neck, or I'm going to have to hang on to him. In this way, I'll be liberated. So you see, their value system puts liberation over the relationship, actually. They're assuming the relationship is already there, because we're Brahmana servants, but in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, the help is given by the Vaidhi Bhakti process initially. And in this way, you develop your relationship with Krishna, your intimate relationship with Krishna, which at the end becomes the most highly valued thing. That's after liberation. If you just take to the process, then you're already, that's the thing. If you just take the holy name and even chant it before you get to that stage where, you know, you're actually meeting the Lord, then you're already liberating yourself. That's namabhas. You're already climbing up out of the well just by chanting. But when you chant Shuddhanam in love, then the Lord is reaching out for you and intimacy is being established. So the Gaudiya Vaishnava conception is actually quite distinct.
Yeah. You have also is that one is right wing, one is left, because the right means is that you are just there, and the other person just takes care. You're completely submissive and everything like that. The left is that it's yours, so you take it like this. But the balance is in the middle, is that an endeavor is made, then the reciprocation is there. The child comes and stands in front of the parent and jumps up and down with their hands in the air. Then the parent picks them up, but only if they do that they get picked up. If they just lay there, it doesn't happen. So it's the endeavor is being reciprocated, because in the other one it's not really, even though you're saying the proximity, the closeness is there, but the action between the two is not actually dynamic, because the kitten's just sitting there. He's not actually taking part in what the mother's doing. And the monkey's holding on, still not taking part in what the mother's doing. But the other one is a combination. So it's actually an interaction. So it's a higher platform. Because the Vaikuntha, then it doesn't have that intimacy. One would think, well, why is that? It would appear it's easier for the Vaikuntha. Because the Vaikuntha, you're actually still working on the platform of liberation. Like you were saying, liberation is put over the thing because you're still interested in one of the five forms of liberation, or four forms of liberation. So then, but in the devotional, in the Gaudiya, then that aspect's not there. It's completely selfless. So there must be, you're working for the other person. To do that, then that's service. That means there must be endeavor. There must be interaction. So unless you've made that commitment, that constant commitment, then it doesn't give the same flavor to Krishna. Because in Vaikuntha, then they'll always be absorbed, but then there's certain times of the day when things happen. You hold court, you go there, it happens. But in Golok, then there's interaction is all the time. Even when it's not there, he's taking part. So it's a slightly different element is there. The depth of it is, the intimacy is greater, let's say that. Because the proximity is there in the Vaikuntha, but the intimacy is not necessarily as great as in Goloka, and especially Vrindavan.
Since Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that Viraha Bhakti, Vipalamba Seva, is higher, so that gives the opportunity, because by being separated, then one values the object of attachment more. And then we were talking about that, but it was already mentioned. Prabhupada said the Lord then appears within the heart of the devotee in Bhava Rupa, which is his most intimate form of association. That's the example of Bilva Mangala Thakur, when after he had blinded himself and he had come to Vraja and he was singing the glories of the Lord, and he was just absorbed in the Lord's holy name and glories and not concerned for himself at all. But one coward boy was coming. No, if you're a saintly person, we don't let anyone go hungry here. So this coward boy would always bring him a pot of milk or, pot of nice milk products and make sure he would take. And Bilva Mangala, he noticed that when the coward boy, because he was blind, he could only hear his voice and sense his presence. But he noticed that when that coward boy was coming, then his ecstasy was increasing so much. And when the coward boy would go, then
pangs of great separation would enter his heart. So by that, he understood that this is actually Krishna. He's just introducing himself as just an ordinary cowherd boy resident of this place. But actually, this is Krishna, who is personally taking care of me. So then, the next time the cowherd boy came, Bilvamangala Thakur suddenly reached out and grabbed him, you know, took hold of him. And laughingly, the cowherd boy slipped away. And Bilvamangala Thakur called after him that, it's not surprising. I'm not at all surprised that you can slip out of my grasp, because after all, you're the Supreme Lord. You're stronger than anyone. So that doesn't actually impress me that you've slipped away from the grasp of my hands. What would impress me is that you could ever get out of my heart. Because here I have you, always. So that's where the greatest intimacy is actually experienced. This Bhava Rupa manifestation is, well, it said is most confidential, it's just unknown outside of this mood of Varaha Bhakti. So it doesn't actually matter if there is proximity.
One could almost fear that, you know, what's been mentioned is that you could almost say that sambhog nourishes Deepa Lamba.
Yeah.
You know, because otherwise it's generally taken the other way, that Deepa Lamba nourishes sambhog. Because the Nimbarkas will work on that. Is that Radha Krishna are always together, but sometimes they have these pastimes like Prema Sarova where they think they're separated, but they're not. They think they are, just for the rasa, and increases therefore feeling the separation, but they're not. So they always emphasize the sambhog. But we, the sambhog is there, but we always bring out the element of the.
And this is also what impressed Uddhava when he came to visit Vrindavan. So the gopis were in separation, and he was just observing how, in their separation, they were always enacting the pastimes of the Lord. They're not only discussing, but enacting. You know, they were in a kind of dramatic, ecstatic, dramatic form. They would play Krishna's different pastimes. And this so deeply impressed Uddhava. He understood that these gopis are the greatest. I mean, he himself is considered by everyone else to be the greatest devotee, the most intimate associate. So much so that he looks, you know, almost exactly like Krishna.
But I thought Krishna was coming.
Yeah, yes. But then he was the one who's praying that if he could just become a blade of grass, then these devotees could step on him as they're going about their business of reminiscing and acting out their separation of the Lord. Because those who would be into sambhog, then they would just be devastated. You know, if they actually realize that, wait, this is not just seeming that Krishna is separated, he actually is gone. He actually has left us. And they would simply be, they wouldn't be able to do any, but the gopis carried on their activities, but were constantly absorbed in discussing the pastimes of the Lord and also acting them out. And then that in turn is why Raghunuga Bhakti is taught by the Goswamis. You see, Rupa Goswami has written these plays, Ujjwala Neelamani, and so on, that, again, these plays, acting them out is considered one of the chief ways of achieving raga. That's why plays, they used to be so important in ISKCON. Prabhupada stressed them so much. And then this Bhava Rupa, the Lord actually enters into the play. That's why Prabhupada said, referring to the time he played at Dvaitacharya in Chaitanya Leela, that the devotees understood that their success will be to get the audience to cry, you know, also to cry out of separation. So that means that the Lord's Bhava form has entered into the actors and then been transferred to the observers of the play, the audience too. In this way, the ecstatic emotions expand.
So that's available for anyone as long as they take it. He's giving it as long as you take it. He's given the rope as long as we grab it. Like that. The 14th quality, knowledge, can be further extended into 5 subheadings. Intelligence, gratefulness, power of understanding the circumstantial environments of place, object, and time. Perfect knowledge of everything and knowledge of the self. Wow, this is mentioned in here. Because it comes up again in the second canto. This is the one I was talking about, the intelligence. There's gratefulness. This is very important because generally we think if someone's very intellectual or anything like that, or my intelligence very developed, that they're kind of dry. But the thing is here, gratefulness is one of them. Power of understanding circumstance and environment, place, time, and circumstance. That means you can make it practical. You can deal with what's there, who's there. Like that. So those two are not necessarily thought of when it comes to it. I think also in the other list, sleep is included.
Oh, yeah. Those 5 aspects.
Yeah. It's grateful for intelligence. One of those also. So that's different than this.
Yeah.
Oh, this is knowledge.
Yes.
And that's breaking down intelligence, I think.
That's
intelligence.
Smriti is another remembrance.
Yeah, memory, yeah. Okay. So it's interesting that knowledge is part of its gratefulness, because that's why there's dakshin. You've gotten something, then a dakshin is given.
But here, intelligence is the first item.
Yeah,
knowledge.
The first item. Well, that's how I noticed that it's...
There anyway.
Yeah.
It was on their pocket.
Yeah. So then it
because
becomes
by knowledge, you get intelligence.
Subdivision of that, yeah. It'd be very interesting to actually take all these qualities and put them how they actually relate to each other. And how, because there's a system, by having this one, then you can get that one, and this is based on that, you know. Because you can't be tolerant if you're not humble. You know, things like that, you know. As far as the beauty of the Lord is concerned, he has some special features that distinguish him from all other living beings. And over and above that, he has some special, attractive, beautiful features by which he attracts the mind of even Radharani, the supermost beautiful creation of the Lord. Means, in other words, beauty is his quality. She is the personification of that. She is his energy. So how beautiful Krishna is, that's Radharani. But still, Krishna has a beauty that's even beyond that, that he can attract his own beauty. That's God. Right. So it's like he can make a hill he can't lift. He can do that and then lift it. Yeah. You know, that's the thing, because he's ever expanding. So it's...
And therefore, we remember that a while ago we read where Prabhupada was writing that, I think I quoted it from a lecture. It was also in this study guide. That people say Krishna is after women, but actually the women are after Krishna.
Yeah. So he just reciprocates.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's the point, is that all the guys that are, you know, how you say, your smooth operators, they still have to go after the women. But here the women come to him, and he just reciprocates with them who have come.
He is known, therefore, as Madan Mohan, or one who attracts the mind of even Cupid. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu has scrutinizingly analyzed other transcendental qualities of the Lord and affirms that Lord Sri Krishna is the absolute supreme personality of Godhead, Parabrahman. He is omnipotent by his inconceivable energies, and therefore he is Yogeshwara, or the supreme master of all mystic powers. Being the Yogeshwara, his eternal form is spiritual, a combination of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. That's interesting, because this means these three go back into being Yogeshwara. You know, it means it's by, you know, it's just, that's what I mean, the qualities are all, because it's like you see in I think it's Kavi Karnapur's play, in the third act, then it opens with Bhakti Devi bumping into Maitri, which is friendship, and I forget what her brother's name is. They've been separated because friendship was the sister and the brother, and their qualities always go together, but Kali has managed to separate them. And so then, but they're all related. All the different qualities, they're all relations to each other. They're all brothers and sisters or parents, you know, just like you have how's it called? There's Yamaraj has two persons that stand next to him. You know? Death and time. So death's son means death's daughter, I think, was who's that funny king? The Brahmins killed him?
Vaina?
Vaina's like that. Yeah. So the qualities are there, and they all have relations with each other. There's a whole family of the qualities. They're all related. So it'd be interesting to see actually how they all relate, and then you understand how, if you have, the, you know, who's the great-grandfather, and if you have that one, you get all the other members of the family, you know. It'd be a very interesting study, you know. He is the control switch of the material energy, and to control the material energy in the innumerable universes. He is the root cause of innumerable incarnations in all the universes. There are more than 500,000 incarnations of Manu in only one universe, beside other incarnations in different universes. In the spiritual world, however, beyond the Mahat Tattva, there is no question of incarnations, but there are plenary expansions of the Lord in different Vaikunthas. The planets in the spiritual sky are at least three times the number of those within the innumerable universes in the Mahat Tattva. Wow, it's the first time I saw a number on that. You know, like that. I came across a purport where Prabhupada says only 1/10 of the jivas make the mistake of coming here. Oh, well, here's three times the number because it's three padas and one pada.
Right.
Okay, so that's... But still, it's filled up to that kind of like, it's using the same spacing. You know, like you have European spacing, Asian spacing, and how close people stand. So same spacing. And all the Narayan forms of the Lord are but expansions of his Vasudev feature. And thus he is Vasudev, Narayan, and Krishna simultaneously. He is Sri Krishna Govinda Hare Murari He Nata Narayana Vasudeva, all in one. His qualities, therefore, cannot be counted by anyone, however great one may be. This is why we make a distinction between the different expansions of the Lord, because the mood and the interaction, the pastime is different. So therefore, the nature of the relationship has its own speciality. But at the same time, we don't make the distinction because they're not different. One devotee once was very much saying something about Vaikuntha Pati and all that. But Prabhupada pointed out, don't make so much distinction, because it's not a different person, it's a different manifestation of a mood. Does that make sense? Like that, because Prabhupada clearly is pointing out, material world you get incarnations, spiritual world you only get expansions. So it's the same person expanding. Incarnations are the same person, but it takes on a very many times different completely thing. But there, it's just adjustments in flavor. You know, if you're very sober, that would be one flavor. If you're very happy, that's another flavor. Or you're being very, like noble and religious and dharmic, that's another flavor. That's Ramachandra. You know, Lord Chaitanya is very merciful. Krishna is just very, spontaneous, and that affection, that sweetness is there. Like that. You know, Dwarka will be the opulence and like that. So, but it's the same person. Like that.
Okay. Well, let's just finish this and we're done with this part. I had become the most fortunate planet within the universe due to being decorated by the signs of the flag, thunderbolt, elephant driving rod, and lotus flower that adorn the lotus feet of the Lord. But just when I was feeling myself to be so fortunate, the Lord suddenly left me. Lord Krishna conquered the gravity of his wives like Satyabhama by means of his sweet smiles of love, pleasing glances, and hearty appeals. When he traversed my surface, I became immersed in the dust from his lotus feet, and thus my hair stood up with transcendental pleasure. Who could tolerate the pangs of separation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead? While Prithivi, the earth, and Dharma, the personality of religion, were thus conversing, Maharaj Pariksit arrived at the banks of the river Saraswati.
Means the Lord is so nice. He's pleasant. They like him because he's a nice guy, right? We're interested many times. The inspiration is because here's the guy that will fulfill our needs. Here's the guy that will, for dharma, artha, kama, or moksha. He'll either make us happy here or he'll get us out of here, right? So that's, of course, that is a quality of the Lord. But here it's just the niceness of it. You know, she's giving the example of Satyabhama. You know, she's complete left-wing, outrageous, completely, seemingly centered around herself, whatever she wanted, like that. And the Lord very nicely, by being pleasant, one would think it's the opposite. The tendency is the heavy lady, then you come on more heavy, and that's how you control her. But here we see Krishna's, she's the heavy girl, he comes on just very sweet and nice, and just deals like that as if everything's perfectly fine, and she's conquered. Right? You get the same theme in Shakespeare's Taming the Shrew. So it's exact opposite of what. So therefore he's so nice, it's such a wonderful person, who could tolerate separation from him? So she's making that point. It's not that, God's gone. No, he is such a wonderful person. Just by his footprints, you feel ecstasy. How can you live without such a person? Okay. End here. Okay. So we'll end. You want to say something?
Just a fine little point. You can see that the earth is lamenting. Also because of the advancement of the symptoms of Kali, which means adharma. Yet she's in the presence of dharma. So actually Krishna is the reservoir, the real reservoir of dharma and the protector of dharma. So now that he's left, even though dharma's right there, she's... She cannot be passing by.
Because the dharma doesn't actually have any... Just taking Maharaj's point a little further, is that the dharma doesn't actually have any meaning unless it's connected to the Lord. So that's the purpose of dharma. That's very clearly stated in the opening of Manu, which is the premier dharma shastra.
and its opening verse, in the second verse, in the invocation, then it says that these religious principles are there so that you can know that Supreme Lord. Like that. There's no other purpose for a religion. So here is that you have religions there, but knowing the Lord, that's the purpose. So that part was what I brought out. And Maharaj brought out that religion himself is there, but still it's not satisfied because the Lord is not there. You know? So because the Lord is there, all religion is there. But even though religion is there, doesn't mean you have the Lord. And religion actually isn't manifest in its full glory unless the Lord is present.
Yeah, religion can't resist. That's the thing. Religion cannot resist the influence of Kali.
Yeah. It means if you protect Dharma, it will protect you. But if you don't protect Dharma, you will not be protected by it. It's not that Dharma will protect you. You protect Dharma, Dharma will take care of you.
This actually comes out in the next...
Next chapter.
Next chapters more and more. That mm-hmm. Unless there's... active. That's what the Maharaj Pariksit did actually. Mm-hmm. He promoted, as soon as he understood that Kali was spreading, he promoted, probably mentioned several times, he promoted Sankirtan Dharma throughout the kingdom. Mm-hmm. And this is the only way that Kali can be defeated.
Prabhupada
makes that point. Unless one actively becomes involved. He actually says that the economy, the world economy has to spend 50% on the promotion of Sankirtan in order to
hold back,
overcome Kali. The influence of Kali.
Well, now
and
they spend.
If that's not done,
yeah.
Then there's no, you know, Dharma, you know, just relying on religious principles themselves is not enough.
Yes. Well, you're supposed to give 50% in charity to spiritual kind of things. It's interesting.
He gives this very clear outline of a program to defeat Kali.
So, well, I guess if you looked at it in the long term, that the money that is spent on, you know, the armaments could be reduced because the people in Krishna conscious there'd be less fighting. And if you would encourage Brahminical culture, then education, because they spend a lot on education. But then that's also for the mission, so then that's there you would.
Jai!
Jai. Jai ho. Okay, Jai.